Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 80. This is FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris here with you today. Got a very, very special mini episode for you. I can't thank enough our good friend Russ Cohen of Sportsology once again for making his platform available to us for the Great American Radio Show. And it is going to be a pleasure to talk to the gentleman that we have lined up who is on hold right now. I have to take my hat off to the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Servillo, for setting this up. He is on quite a roll the last couple of months, no question about that. With that Ken Shamrock, Christopher Cross, Steve Perry, the fourth appearance of Bob Barker. So this gentleman certainly belongs on that list of notables. There's no question about that. He is also the third gentleman from the worldwide leader to come through our virtual doors, along with Jeremy Schapp and Jason Stark. He, like the mayor, Sean Casey, also a big fan of the pro graps, so we'll have to hit that. It is, after all, WrestleMania season, so we'll have to talk about that with him. He, like our recent guest, Mike Harmon, is a fantasy football broadcaster. You can catch him Sunday mornings on ESPN2 during football season. He is, again, one of the more distinguished guests that we've managed to have on the program here. It is so great to have him on. He anchors college football Saturday game updates on ABC. He was one of the original daytime SportsCenter anchors in 2008 when that project kicked off. He still hosts SportsCenter an awful lot and programming across ABC, ESPN, and ESPN2. I could only be speaking of the one and only Robert Flores, who we are pleased to welcome to the FDH Lounge. Robert, it's a pleasure to have you on tonight. How are you, sir? Robert? Robert, welcome
yes.
to the program, sir.
Hey, thank you very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you. It's great to have you on. It's great to have you with us. A logical place to start, from following you on Twitter and watching last Sunday during the Super Bowl,
uh-huh.
I guess my obvious opening question would be, what's it like to watch the Super Bowl when you're preparing for the Sports Center that comes afterwards? I was entertained by following along, and you were talking about talking to Herm Edwards during the game,
yeah.
which has got to be its own brand of fun. But what's it like to get ready for Sports Center when you're watching the same game the rest of us are?
Well, it's hard to kind of keep your attention on the task that you have to complete, and you also have to make sure that you remember that your program doesn't necessarily follow the Super Bowl. So there's we were on kind of in the latter stages of the game, so you got to keep focused. But obviously, it was great to watch, and I watched the first half. In one of our conference rooms with Herm Edwards. He was there with a few other of my colleagues, and he was just, talking about the game, calling out, what defenses they were in, and it was really interesting to hear his perspective. I mean, a guy that knows the game inside and out, and to hear his thoughts on what was taking place. So that's definitely one of the highlights that I've had in the last couple of years.
Well, that sounds tremendous. But in some ways, that sounds like something that probably happens with those of you anchors on a fairly regular basis, right? I would imagine like whoever's sitting down and watching a game, say for example with Jaws when he's in the building, I got to think that they're probably getting the same kind of breakdown. But that's got to be pretty sweet getting the it's almost like a private show for you there when you got your analysts watching a game with you.
Yeah, it was, and like I said, just because he knows so much about the game. And as a fan like most of us, you know a lot about the game, and I've been watching it for years. But just to hear his perspective on what what the coordinators for each team are thinking, what they're trying to do in ways of coverage or exploiting a particular defense, it was definitely interesting to hear that perspective. He talked about how the players had to, once they're on the field after they get introduced, there's a long time between once you're introduced in mass to when you kick it off. And he says that takes a while to get used to. And, of course, he was referring to his days, when the Eagles played the Raiders in, I believe it was Super Bowl 13, if I'm not mistaken. So that was interesting to hear kind of his thoughts on what the players might be thinking.
That is interesting because, yeah, back around 1980, 1981, everything was certainly less over the top than it is now. So that's kind of fascinating to hear him say that some of those aspects were around even then. As far as other things that are not around anymore, that would include the actual title of ABC Sports, with it having been subsumed under the ESPN banner. And it's understandable for marketing purposes and everything like that why that's the case, even though there's probably a lot of us that really kind of feel some pang and nostalgia over it. But for somebody like you, broadcasting on there on Saturdays, holding down mm-hmm. that spot during college football season, I mean, does it pass through your head once in a while that, you know, gee, I mean, this is the same ground as, you know, McKay and Postel and Schenkel? That's got to go through your mind at least once or twice.
Well, also, not only just the fact that, you know, I help out with our college football coverage, but I also host ESPN Sports Saturday, which
yes.
is, that comes on tomorrow, 4 Eastern on ABC. And that is basically the time slot that ABC's Wide World of Sports occupied for so many years. And, you know, you talk about Jim McKay and Howard Cosell. And it, as a kid of the 70s, I mean, that was, if you were a sports fan, that was appointment viewing Saturday afternoons. I mean, because it brought you not only sports that you weren't used to seeing on a daily basis, sports from around the world, but that's where I got some of my big-time boxing. I remember watching, on tape delay, Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard, their fight in Montreal and the rematch in New Orleans. I think those were Wide World of Sports broadcast on a tape delayed basis on Saturday. To be occupying that time slot is for me it's a big honor. I mean, the show that we do now, it's not anything like the Wide World of Sports, but just to be in that kind of neighborhood time wise or on the same kind of program guide, it's definitely a big honor to be in that mix.
Oh, absolutely. And ESPN's pretty omnipresent, but it's got to be pretty cool to be able to say network also, to be able to do both on that. And I don't know, Robert, growing up in Houston, from what I saw of the ratings, maybe it wasn't as big down there, but you talk about late Saturday afternoons. Here in the Rust Belt, I grew up in Cleveland. Chris Schenkel, Bo Burton, that was required viewing for anybody up here in the upper Midwest, the Saturday afternoon bowling. That's a bygone thing from the ABC schedule, but that was yet another thing that popped some pretty big ratings back in the day.
Yeah, it is, and if you're of, like I said, if depending on your age, when you hear that theme song and the Jim McKay's The Thrill of Victory and The Agony of Defeat, I mean, those are iconic images, and that's an iconic show. And the show we do now, it does span some different sports, but like, for instance, tomorrow we're going to be talking a lot of NBA basketball, college hoops, as March Madness is just right around the corner, and we get input from all of our various analysts across all sports. So it's not Wide World of Sports 2.0 by any means, but
sure.
Like I said, just to be in that mix on ABC Saturday afternoons, to be broadcasting there on that network, for me, like I said, a kid of the 70s, that's a pretty big deal for me.
Oh, absolutely. I think it would be for anybody. It's very understandable. But as far as the ESPN brand itself, I know that for anybody that read your interview with Deadspin a few years back, I think they probably came away with that feeling as I did, that you were a very good sport about some of the things out there, some of the perceptions that exist. And, you know, I mean, I know I've been as guilty of anybody of, you know, talking about that there's probably a, you know, a hydrogen-powered storyline generator in a back warehouse there, you know. But what are some of the more outlandish things that you've heard, theories about how the places operate, or things that people have spouted off about and you thought to yourself, gee, it really doesn't work that way?
You know, I can't think of anything right off. I mean, when you're as big and as popular in most circles as we are, sure, you're going to have your share of critics. And sometimes the criticism is fair. Other times it's not. Sometimes the things I read, you know, it's just you read it and you think, well, boy, where do they get that? That's the farthest thing from the truth. But it just goes with the territory. I mean, this is big boy TV, and if you want to work for this company, and particularly if you want to anchor SportsCenter, arguably the most important sports television show of all time, then you have to be willing to have thick skin and be able to take criticism, because the viewers demand a lot of us, and rightly so. And if there are times that we don't meet those standards, then we deserve to be criticized. But, you know, for the most part, it's you can't believe everything you read. But as I said, when there are times that we come up short and we do get criticism, I think this company does a good job of accepting it and trying to get better.
Very well said. And when you talk about the SportsCenter franchise, obviously, again, as time goes on, as the story of that thing is written, and particularly once we get decades down the road, a little bit further removed from it, I think what happened in 2008 is going to be one of the very big things for it to be live in the daytime for the first time. How does that feel from a legacy perspective in terms of being part of that and bringing it to daytime on a regular basis, being part of that crew that did it for the first time?
Well, it was kind of uncharted territory. I remember when hearing about it, you know, months before we launched, I was thinking, who's going to watch that? You know, I think people like to watch the highlights from the night before, and how's this going to work? But, you know, to the people, the decision makers that made that ultimate call, I think it has worked. And it, you know, we do live in a 24-hour news cycle. Stories don't last for very long, and our attention span is one to where we're already looking forward to the next thing. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, but that's just the way it is. And I think the live sports centers during the day serve that need for looking forward, kind of looking ahead, turning the page, so to speak, because that's what our fans want. As far as legacy goes, I mean, it's nice to be among, you know, kind of that group that was on there for the very first shows, but I'm hoping that my legacy is something beyond that, something bigger, something better when my career's up here. But who knows?
Oh, absolutely. You got a long ways ahead of you. But, yeah, that's just one of the things I thought of when I saw that'll always be one of the things they'll –
yeah, it was
is being part of that. You know, you talked about wondering about it when the announcement was first made. I wondered also in the sense that you guys already had ESPN News up and going, which, of course, you've done also. How was it explained to you guys as far as differentiating between ESPN News and the daytime sports centers? Because I kind of wondered about that.
Well, at ESPN News, more often than not, the template, if you will, is for half hour. And SportsCenter is an hour-long format. So
Okay. The
way that they explained it to us is that we'll have the resources, the look, more importantly, the name value of SportsCenter, be able to expand upon the big stories of the day, either from the night before or the big stories that are coming up later in the day, and be able to elaborate and give a little bit more context and perspective than say a show that just has a half hour. That's kind of how it was explained to us. But like I said, I mean, when I first heard about it, I was skeptical. But you know, luckily those decisions are way above my pay grade, and to their credit, it has been a success.
Yeah, it's worked out very well. No question about that. One of the things I touched on when I was bringing you on the line here was about fantasy football. That's mm-hmm. actually something we get pretty heavily involved with ourselves here. So for you, anchoring on Sunday mornings there, and obviously being a big fantasy football fan yourself,
yeah, sure.
I want to start by putting the question to you. You have kind of a unique perspective also, as we talked about doing the Saturday afternoon games, so you're able to see very closely the talent pipeline that's coming along here. Do you see it as being a real durable thing here, this trend with the quarterbacks? I mean, 4,000 yards this year. I'm not going to say people were passing like it was nothing, but relative to years past, it's like they were. And you got some great young quarterbacks coming along in this draft and in the one beyond that. Is it a trend that you see as being durable with this kind of extreme explosiveness?
You know, for the foreseeable future, yeah, just because the NFL is so popular, and one of the elements of its popularity is the fact that it's an offensive league. It's a passing league. There are rules that are made to protect receivers, protect quarterbacks, not only rules that have been on the books for years, but rules that we saw this year and become enforced with increasing frequency this season, you know, protecting a prone receiver, not being able to go after a quarterback's hitting a quarterback low, which is something that has been on the books for a couple of seasons. So, and definitely not being able to come anywhere near a quarterback's head or helmet. All those things lead to more time for the quarterback, more time for the receiver to get open. And when you're dealing with these kind of athletes, the more time you give them, the more effective they will be. So unless there's something coming along on the horizon that we can't foresee, this is only going to increase. It's definitely not going down.
No, I agree with you for what it's worth. It does look like a real trend there. And one of the things that could fuel a trend like that, of course, is a greater capacity of quarterbacks to throw to explosive wide receivers. And in that vein, I personally, I'm very, very much impressed with this draft class coming in. To me, I think you could make a very good case for this one maybe being the best one since that legendary class of 96 when you're looking at some of the first round and second round guys. How do you see this draft class in terms of the receivers and in terms of how they'll fit into this vertical game in the NFL the next couple of years?
Well, when you're talking quarterbacks, I mean, obviously it starts with Andrew Luck. And,
sure.
You know, by all accounts, he is going to be the best quarterback prospect in generations. Some have said he's the best since John Elway. So, you know, we'll see. As far as beyond Andrew Luck, you know, you're looking at Robert Griffin III, the Heisman Trophy winner. And then after him, it's kind of an unknown. You know, what do you have there? Is it Ryan Tannehill? Is it Brock Osweiler, kid out of Arizona State? You know, after Luck and Griffin III, it's kind of up in the air.
Sorry, maybe I misspoke. I meant to say wide receivers. The Justin Blackman, Michael Floyd, et cetera, those guys coming in.
Do
you agree that this is a super vaunted class? And if so, how do you think that's going to fit the trend in the league?
Yeah, I think that Justin Blackman's going to be a stud. I mean, someone compared him to someone said he's like Dez Bryant, except with more discipline, you know? They both played at Oklahoma State, but Blackman is a beast, and I think Michael Floyd out of Notre Dame can be someone that is that has an immediate impact. Obviously, he's had some problems off the field at Notre Dame, which is going to raise a red flag with a lot of NFL teams, and people will want to get to the bottom of his situation at Notre Dame and find out if he can be trusted with a first round draft pick. But I think that a guy that a receiver that could be the best aside from Justin Blackmon is Kendall Wright out of Baylor. I mean, Robert Griffin III this season threw the deep ball exceptionally well, and more often than not, it was Kendall Wright that he was looking at. So I think he's a guy that has great speed. You know, can he adapt to the NFL game? I mean, that's always the big question. But I think that's a guy that could be an impact player at the receiver position.
No question about it. Yeah, I think this draft is just dripping with guys that could be big playmakers, and that's really going to bear some looking at next year and in years to come. Also mentioned in the intro here that, of course, for anybody that follows you on Twitter, for anybody that's seen you give little shout-outs on a SportsCenter here and there, one of the big pro wrestling fans, certainly at the worldwide leader. So my first question for you, and looking at where you grew up and the time frame, were you fortunate enough, did you get a chance to catch any of that really sweet Bill Watts stuff back when Mid-South was really in its heyday? Were you getting that in Houston?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Houston wrestling was its own promotion for the longest time, especially for most of the 70s, if I'm not mistaken. And then they got put into the Mid-South promotion in the early 80s. So I was exposed to Mid-South and NWA wrestling since I was a little kid. So I always preferred that to the WWF at the time, now WWE. So yeah, it was you know, I thought that was some of the best wrestling going. I mean, we also had world class championship wrestling out of Dallas. You could get that on cable. So I was fortunate enough that I got to watch a lot of good old school wrestling growing up in Houston.
Well, if you preferred the NWA stuff to the WWF, one more reason to say you're a good man, Robert, because I'll tell you, that was watching on Saturday nights on TBS where I was growing up. And nobody ever believes it when I tell them, but, you know, growing up in a fairly blue-collar type of town, nobody ever believes this, but Ronnie Garvin was probably bigger than Hulk Hogan at my high school. Yeah, it was just that guy was, you know, he was one of the icons of that period of time, and unless you were really catching it while it was happening on TBS in that time frame, it's hard to tell that to people.
Yeah, and you know, he's kind of an underrated superstar, if you will. I mean, he had a really good run, as you mentioned, in, you know, NWA and World Championship Wrestling, and he definitely was a guy that looking back, he probably, people don't recall him or don't remember him or kind of recognize his contribution and the run that he had during that time. But yeah, I mean, that's a good old school name, dude, because he definitely
had
it going.
He was really, really epic. Oh, no question about it. And the old Mid-South UWF stuff, unfortunately, that's one of the tape libraries that's eluded Vince. So unless somebody like you was able to see it while it was happening, it's hard to get your hands on a lot of that kind of stuff. But we'd had on the show previously Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton talking about a time, I'm sure you can believe this, you could probably visualize this in your head, a place where, I don't remember where it was, maybe it was somewhere in Arkansas, the cops hadn't been smartened up, and basically when the usual riot broke out with the fans, they ended up getting maced, and Cornette basically got the tar beaten out of him at ringside.
By the police?
I think so. Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
they were in the shower
that.
Washing the mace out of their eyes. They were like, "Where's Jimmy? Where's Jimmy?" They both had to go back out the ringside. He was in the fetal position, just laying there after having absorbed a pretty bad beating. So I'm sure you can visualize a scene for like that from watching it at the time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, fans that in the South and in Houston, where I grew up, and Arkansas and Louisiana. I mean, those are some of the most passionate wrestling fans of all time. So it was different then than it was back now. I mean, people are still passionate about it, but it was different then.
Yeah, and these days, you know, the cops have been smartened up, so you don't have to worry about that if you're one of the bad guys out there having the cops turn on you. But with this being WrestleMania season and looking at what's going to happen, obviously the talk since about this time last year has been John Cena and The Rock, and that'll of course be the main event. But when you're looking at what's going to be durable and what's going to be the picture going forward from this thing and the chance to use this as a launching pad for greater recognition for the other guys. Do you feel pretty positive, as do a lot of people, about the respective places of CM Punk and Daniel Bryan? And you look at the pipeline down in Tampa with some of the great indie guys that have been signed there, I guess Chris Hero being just about the most recent of them. Do you have a good feeling looking at it that the creme de la creme as far as talent and work rate and ability does seem to be making its way towards the top?
Yeah, I think that the WWE does a great job of I mean, they do so many things well, but I think one thing that they do that doesn't get mentioned enough is their ability to create superstars. They do a really good job of getting guys that are raw and new and molding them, helping them become the superstars that they are. I mean, certainly there are things that the individual has to have that are just natural, that can't be taught or can't be acquired through any sort of tutoring, but the WWE does a really good job of bringing those elements out and developing superstars. So I'm confident their shortage of superstars will not run dry until Vince, as long as Vince is running things, they'll be fine. You know, as far as the other promotions, particularly TNA, Impact Wrestling, I think that, you know, I like watching Impact Wrestling, and I know a lot of a couple of the guys that work for them. I'm friends with Jeff Jarrett and Eric Young, and I really like watching their product on Thursdays on Spike. And I just wish that they would they could find a way to create a big superstar on their own, and that's kind of one of the challenges I think that they're still trying to overcome. But you know, Dixie Carter and the people that run it there, I mean, there's some smart people there too. So I think they just need time. I think they just need to give some of these stars of their own time. You know, I'm glad they have Robert Roode as the champion and giving James Storm a chance to get in some high profile matches. So that's the whole thing. It's developing new superstars. I mean, I think fans, for the most part, we like seeing Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair, but you know, you don't want to see them too much, you know, because you want to see someone new.
Absolutely, and as far as it goes for wrestling, yeah, that's going to be the big challenge for them, is to create the stars for the next several years. But everything you said about the WWE and the star making and the development of talent, I mean, I suppose that probably holds true for the sports casting industry as well. And you know, if you've got enough game and if you've got enough drive, you will make it to the big time. In this case, being a SportsCenter, and it's just always a pleasure to watch you on there, Robert. And
well,
a pleasure
you.
To have you on with us here today and be able to have a great conversation with us. Thank you so much. We'd love to do it again, sir.
All right. Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and thanks for the kind words.
Excellent. Thanks very much. The great Robert Flores, everybody. Want to thank you all for tuning in. Mini episode number 80, the FDH Lounge, the Great American Radio Show.